Last week, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis became the latest to announce his campaign, joining six other Republicans in the primary to try and unseat President Biden, who faces two challengers so far in his own party. The DeSantis announcement came the same day as the Marquette Law School released its latest poll measuring public opinion on different presidential candidates and some of the top issues that could shape the 2024 election. We're taking a closer look at those results and the field of candidates with the help of the person behind the poll. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the pool of Republican candidates running for president so far for 2024? Do you think any of them could unseat Trump as a Republican front runner? Why or why not? And what issues do you think will be the most important to voters in the next presidential election? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Charles Franklin is a professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He's also co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Charles, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Good to be with you.
Now, before we start saying numbers here, one little caveat, I guess, a warning. I looked back 8 years ago at this time, the 2016 campaign. Mid-2015, a guy by the name of Scott Walker, Wisconsin governor, he was a front runner for Republicans. He dropped out of the race a couple months later. We're at a stage where things could change pretty quick, right?
Yes, we absolutely are. And I think that bears repeating often and loudly. There's a sort of simultaneous but opposite view here. Mm-hmm. One set of people say polls mean nothing at this point. But another set of people say so-and-so has the race locked in. You know, it's Trump's to lose. These things can change. And as you point to 2015, here in the state, we saw a huge change as Scott Walker went from a front runner to dropping out at the end of the summer.
But starting a poll now, you can get a baseline and see what changes, what kind of progress is going. How often will you be checking in on the trends in this race?
We'll be doing this every 2 months, every other month for the national survey. And you're exactly right. The point is that we're not polling today to say who the eventual winner will be. But when we look back 16 months from now, we want to have a clear record of who emerged when and what changed over the course of the campaign. And think of the difference between a snapshot at the very beginning of the movie and the whole movie. We've got the snapshot now. When we get to November 2024, we'll be able to look back and watch the entire movie and see how the candidates emerged or collapsed.
Looking at the latest poll now, you found that either Donald Trump or Ron DeSantis were ahead of Joe Biden again in the national polling. Can you talk about what you saw there?
Sure. Trump leads by 5 points over Biden, 52-47, and DeSantis leads by 4 points, 52-48. Those are still pretty close races, and we've seen the lead shift a little bit. Biden has been a bit ahead in earlier polling, but all of it points to a pretty close race. And again, at this point, that tells you relative strength, not eventual outcome. But certainly the Biden administration, the Biden campaign, has to pay attention to this and not take 2024 for granted.
Then looking at the Republican field so far, we got a handful of names in. I think more expected to come over the next few months. What did you find when you asked people, and especially Republicans, about the race for the nomination?
Yes, and so this is among Republican primary voters. Donald Trump has stepped out to a pretty good lead at this point, 46%, DeSantis at 25%. And then there's a big drop off to Nikki Haley at 5% and Vivek Ramaswamy at 3%. Nobody else rises to even 3%. We asked about 11 different candidates in this. That is a bit of an improvement from March when we had Trump at 40% and DeSantis at 35%. So you're seeing a bit of a rise for Trump in the party. A bit of a decline for DeSantis. Of course, just this past week, DeSantis officially got into the race. and has a heavy campaign scheduled this week in Iowa and in New Hampshire, as Trump is also campaigning in Iowa this week.
Now, a big Trump advantage in 2016 seemed to be, you know, along the course of the primary, he never had or rarely had majority support, but he almost always had plurality support, consistent levels of support, and with a big wide open field, that was enough to see him through. As we see more and more people entering this race, does that make it seem like the same thing could happen again?
Well, I think it certainly does. You see the support for everybody in single digits is scattered across a lot of candidates. Haley at just 5% is hardly emerging as a front runner. It's only DeSantis at 25 that gets up into double digits. But I think, again, it's important to realize that in previous years, including 2012, we saw three or four different candidates make runs for at least second place and really rise quickly. Though in 2012, those same candidates fell off pretty quickly, and Mitt Romney ended up with the nomination. The other thing that's different this time compared to 2016 with Trump is that at this point, he's polling in the mid to upper 40s in most surveys among Republican voters. That's a bit higher than the 30s or high 20s even that he was typically in 2016. So I think it's important to note that Trump is a more dominant figure in the party this year than in 2016, though there's certainly still the possibility for him to go into a tough spot and slump, and for any of a number of these alternatives to maybe get their moment to make their case and surge.
Talking to Charles Franklin with the Marquette University Law School poll, looking at the Republican field of candidates for president, the issues that could shape this race, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Madison. Tom, hi.
Good afternoon. I would gladly cross party lines and vote for a Liz Cheney, Michael Steele ticket.
Thanks for the call, Tom. So Liz Cheney, I don't think she showed up in your polling. I don't know that she has visited places like New Hampshire, I know, but I don't know that she's seriously considering running. Michael Steele, the former Republican National Committee chair, who's been critical of the Trump era of the party as well. Charles, candidates waiting to get in, other people that you polled or didn't poll?
Well, we have not asked about Cheney, though, in fact, some national polling has asked about her. I think what you find there is that within the Republican Party, she is viewed quite negatively, but this reflects the divide in the party, where a majority are quite positive to Trump, even if they're not favoring him as their nominee. And Cheney is not that popular within the Republican Party, except for the small never Trump faction of the party. So I think what Tom reflects is the possibility of crossover votes. But unfortunately, in the case of Cheney, that's someone who's very unlikely to be able to win the Republican nomination.
Thanks for that call. Lenny joins us now in Lake Geneva. Lenny, hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Lenny?
You know, I think Trump is unbeatable on the Republican side of things, simply because all the other candidates, none of them are entertainers. None of them are entertainers. And I think, unfortunately, Americans want to be entertained every waking moment, and it's not policy anymore. It's entertainment and politics. And I think that at the end of the day, he'll win because nobody else can entertain and provide drama like Donald Trump. And before I leave you, here's the ultimate left liberal Democratic candidates ticket. It would be Matthew McConaughey for president and Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, as VP. And I'm not kidding you, unbeatable.
Lenny, thanks for the call. Lenny, pointing toward, I think, something other people have observed, Charles, is this now more about whether you like this candidate or not, whether they're entertaining or not, versus this candidate's policy leanings?
Well, I think entertainment is certainly a big feature in modern American politics. Way back in the old days, we used to talk about charisma. Did a candidate have charisma? That wasn't quite the same as entertainment value, but I think we've seen that entertainment value rise, as we've seen entertainers like Arnold Schwarzenegger win governor of California, not to mention Ronald Reagan, for that matter. So I do think there is an emphasis on personality. I'd put it in the broader context that elections are broadly about parties, issues, and candidates. And the candidate factor has always been a big feature. Now, maybe the emphasis on what kind of personality, what kind of candidate has more of the entertainment value than maybe it once did.
Thanks for that call, Lenny. We're talking to Marquette Law School poll director Charles Franklin about the candidates in the race for president in 2024, especially the Republican field, and some of the top issues that could shape that election. They recently did a national poll on the candidates and the issues, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think issues like abortion will be a big factor in the presidential race next year? What is the big issue for you, if not abortion? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, director of the Marquette University Law School poll, with us to talk about the latest Marquette poll looking at the biggest issues in the 2024 presidential election, public opinion of the candidates who have entered the race so far. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Charles, before we go back to our callers, I wanted to talk about at least one of the issues in the race. You surveyed people about the issue of abortion. People have seen it in Wisconsin as a big factor in the state Supreme Court race. What were some of the biggest findings there?
I think the big takeaway is that a substantial majority still say that abortion should be legal in all or most cases. That's 68% in this month's survey. 32% say it should be illegal in all or most. But those numbers haven't changed very much. Back in May of 2022, a full year ago, it was 67% legal in all or most, 32% illegal in all or most. So there hasn't been much change in that. People are still largely disapproving of the Supreme Court's decision in overturning Roe versus Wade. But there's not very much agreement on when during a pregnancy abortion should be limited or banned. The public sort of struggles to reach a majority on any of the options we gave. The only true majority is 56% would favor a ban after 6 months, but a minority favors bans after 15 weeks, 6 weeks, or any time after conception. So you're just not seeing very much momentum there to support bans on a national basis. Obviously, state by state, there's a lot of variation in that and a lot of variation in what individual states have done and adopted as policy in their states.
Let's go back to our callers. Jeff is with us now in Superior. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. If the election were today, like the Wisconsin primary or something, I would vote for Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina. But I think the economy is going to be the number one issue, and we may see a third-party candidate like Elon Musk at the last minute.
Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. First of all, Tim Scott, Charles, you asked about him in the poll. You were in the field, I think, just before he would have announced his candidacy officially.
Yes, and he's very little known. In Washington, he's well-known and well-thought of, but even among Republican primary voters, we get 72% that say they don't. 72% who say they've. I'm going to say this right eventually. 59% say they haven't heard enough about him among Republican primary voters. It's a little higher among the population at large. He's net positive 28 favorable to 13 unfavorable. But this is a perfect example of someone who's got a strong Washington reputation, but is simply not well known nationally yet. But that's exactly why we have these long primary campaigns, is so a person like Scott can emerge, have his chance to make his case.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. Jeff also mentioned the possibility of third-party races. Now, Elon Musk, not born in the U.S., so not eligible. Also, he seems to support the DeSantis campaign, at least so far. But some people have raised the possibility of third-party runs, especially if it's a Trump-Biden race. There's been some other polling saying people don't want another Trump-Biden race. What did you find, Charles?
Yeah, our data shows the public is pretty reluctant about a Trump-Biden rematch. We get about 26% who say if it's Biden or Trump, they'd rather get somebody else. It's only when we push them that we get the 52-47 split that we see overall. But what happens when those quarter of the electorate who say they don't like either of these candidates get pushed on it, they ultimately choose somebody. And you also see this in wanting them to run or not. Less than two-thirds of Republicans say they'd like to see Trump run. Less than half of Democrats say they'd like Biden to run. But when it comes to a choice between their party's candidate and the other party's candidate, the vast majority of them come home to their party. So it's easy to look at this discontent with Trump and Biden and say, aha, here's the opening for a third party. But third parties ultimately have to overcome that tendency to choose between your party and the other party and decide on that basis. And lastly, don't forget the Electoral College. That matters hugely in presidential races. Back in 1992, Ross Perot won 19% of the nationwide popular vote, the best of anybody since 1912, and yet he didn't win a single Electoral College vote. And as we know, it's the Electoral College that ultimately decides who the president is.
We'll go to another caller now. Susan is with us in Rhinelander. Susan, hello.
Hi, Rob. Love your show.
Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to offer that it seems to be a direct correlation between how things are polling and the fact that so these other candidates just don't get any media airtime, like Asa Hutchinson, for example. I think he'd have a broad appeal if he just could get some oxygen out there in the media space. Thanks so much.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. And Charles, I think there is a concern that sometimes there's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We see a poll that someone like former Governor Asa Hutchinson isn't getting polled. Well, then we in the media don't talk about him. And then, well, in the next poll, still nobody knows anything about him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is where the small early states, Iowa and New Hampshire, have played an important role. There's a big Republican event in Iowa this week that I think most of these Republican candidates are expected to show up for. And that really is the opportunity for these lesser known candidates to go and make an impression. Remember, that was Jimmy Carter's strategy way back when nobody had heard of the Georgia governor at that time. And I do think it's an upside to having some small states early in the process where you can make an impression with voters one-on-one and really genuinely introduce yourself in a way that big states with big TV budgets don't allow.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mike is with us now in Wauwatosa. Mike, hello.
Hi. So in the 2016 election, I think the general population maybe lost some confidence in the accuracy of polling based on what polls were saying versus how the election turned out. How has method changed in polling to basically increase confidence, increase accuracy? Have you guys seen a change in method of polling, I guess, over the last few years?
Mike, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Charles. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm anxious to get this in. there's been a lot of change in polling. We're moving more and more to interviewing people who are on the registered voter list, so we know they're registered to vote. We're also shifting from telephone to online methods of interviewing. It's all about getting people's opinion. And most pollsters now will contact voters or attempt to contact voters through multiple methods, through email, text messages, phone calls, sending letters to their home address and asking them to do polls. So all of these methods are changing. Polling was pretty good in 2022, and it was not so good in 2020. And we obviously had a big error in 2016. So this is an ongoing challenge. 22 here in the state and 2018 here in the state was quite good. 2020, we did pretty well here, but some polling nationally was pretty far off in 22. So I think skepticism is certainly warranted, but it's not because the pollsters aren't trying to adjust. We're very much trying to adjust our methods to reach people where they're willing to be reached and offer us their opinions.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Charles, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
Thank you. Always fun.
That's Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University and director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He's also the co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsAndVotes.com. He's with us today to talk about the latest Marquette poll and public opinion of the candidates and the issues in the upcoming 2024 presidential election. Is there an issue, a point of concern for you as you start to think about the 2024 election? Or are you putting off thinking about the 2024 election? Still a ways away? Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org.